This is Frontierland with Dr. Dean Allen.
According to the author Tom This, having a purpose is the difference between making a living and making a life. A son of the African soil, Wayne Bolton lived in Zambia and Zimbabwe before settling in South Africa. His purpose is conservation. By day he runs his own labour law consulting business, at other times he is a qualified field guide for the Kruger National Park and Addo Elephant National Park areas. He also volunteers as a ranger for the sand parks. In 2017, Wayne and his wife Nikki established a non-profit company, One Land Love It, affectionately known by the acronym OLLI. Together with their daughter Laura and a board of directors, OLLI is active in rhino conservation, including direct rhino work, education and awareness. An adventurer at heart, Wayne has actually cycled the equivalent of 3/4 of the way around the world in aid of his cause. His purpose in life is truly an inspiration. Enjoy. Well, Wayne, you've ridden a bicycle from Namibia to Nelson Mandela Bay, a total of 2,500 kilometres. Are you mad?
I think I might be. Sometimes I wonder if I've had too much sun. But I like to think it's passion that drives me, and a little bit of madness helps as well.
So tell me a bit more about this One Land Love It initiative. We know it as OLLI, of course, and I understand that it's a family affair.
Yeah, Dean, so the roots are in a family initiative, but obviously it's become greater than that now. We have a fully-fledged board of directors, which for governance purposes is essential. But OLLI, which is the acronym for One Land Love It, was really birthed out of our first expedition. Rode 6,000 Ks joining all the sand parks reserves, and we picked up a substantial following, like-minded people who really enjoyed conservation and what we were doing. And we wanted to do some justice to that. And OLLI was born.
I want to talk a bit about you, if I may, Wayne, because you really are a son of Africa. You were born in Zambia. You grew up in Zimbabwe. So tell me about those formative years.
Yeah, so I wish I remembered more about Zambia, because I left there when I was 3. But subsequently did go back with my late dad. It was one of the highlights, I think, of my life now, looking back, just to go and see your heritage. You know, as you get on, you want to go and see where you're from, basically. But Zambia was very much an environment where, you know, fishing and hunting and outdoors was just a part of your DNA. And so it's no surprise that what I do now is with that in mind. But we left when we were about 3 years old, you know, with the change in the schooling and the hospital set up. My folks took a decision that at the time Rhodesia offered a greater opportunity, you know, for schooling and so on. And so we moved south like so many other people did at the time. And I stayed there until I was 17. So really I still see myself as a Zimbabwean. That, I think, was where my core goes. And a lot of time spent in the bush as a youngster, you know, in those days with a catty or a bicycle or, you know, that kind of an existence. But certainly my parents, and I think in particular my dad, had a love for the bush. So it really became ingrained in me not to take nature for granted. It was something that gives me absolute satisfaction. I feel like I'm myself, my own person when I'm in the bush. And I think Zim gave me that. And then we moved down further south in to Durban. We lived there, and that's where I met my wife, who is still my wife after over 30-odd years. But I'm glad that I've been able to carry on that passion for what I do in wildlife. Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about your family, so important to you, of course, and I understand that your daughter Laura is also involved in what you do.
Yeah, so both of our kids love the outdoors. You know, our son Daniel, who's in Cape Town, is an architect, with Laura being closer here, has really had opportunity to explore that passion as well. And as I say, a lot of these things are how you bring your children up. If you bring your kids up like my folks brought us up to really be conservationist and to appreciate nature and to bring longevity to nature through what you do, it's a part of your value system. So Laura became a Sandparks honorary ranger together with Nikki and I. Well, afterwards, obviously, but I've been one for over 15 years now, both Nikki and I. And so she got involved in that, and being involved in the first expedition, I think, just ignited that that activism, that it's not enough just to care for wildlife, for the environment. You have to move from caring to doing, and obviously that's what the cycling really symbolized. You're doing something physically to make the future a better place. So she's got on board with that. She's busy with her helicopter license at this stage. She wants to be involved in conservation work through flying. And she's got a marketing inclination as well. So she does really good support for us on the expeditions and for our non-profit, One Land Love It.
So for people listening, it's obviously a balance you've got to create here. I mean, you're not an adventurer 24 hours a day. I mean, you've got this incredible sort of CV of things that you've done. But by day, you're actually a labor law consultant. And at other times, of course, you run, paddle and cycle. In fact, when we were chatting earlier, we worked out you've probably pedaled 3/4 of the way around the world. So a real adventurer, of course. But how do you balance these aspects of your life?
Yeah, there's the trick, isn't it? I mean, always try to bring the kids up that way, to say there's got to be a balance, and fight hard to get that balance, because this modern pace is so quick that if you're not careful, you'll topple over. You're on this treadmill of life, but you know, as you go through life, I think your needs change, and you know, as a youngster, the only thing that's important is watching cartoons and having chocolates or sweets. But as you get older and as you progress through it, you know, how you obtain happiness in your life or what you do to make a difference changes. And so, you know, the old dogs can't learn new tricks is nonsense. So this trigger for me almost happened by osmosis when I was 49. It was a realization that, you know, this is not, there's more to life than being on this treadmill of life and trying to make ends meet in my own small business. You know, what is it that's going to bring meaning to your life? And of course, the best thing is to have something that also adds value to others, something bigger than your own ego or yourself. So that's basically how the expeditions started. It was a thought that I wanted to do something that really made me feel alive, and I'd read a really good book by Peter van Ketz, The Eighth Summit, and it inspired me to go and do something, because I didn't think I could actually do the 6,000-kilometer cycle between all the Sandparks reserves that I ended up doing in 2015, 2016, the first time it was ever done. I didn't think it was possible. And you know, in your life, you have to put yourself at the starting line of something that you don't think you can actually achieve, in some kind of a micro adventure, and everybody's, you know, concept of an adventure is different. But you have to put yourself there and think, well, at that start line, is this something I can manage? And if you don't do that, you don't really get self-development. And so it was important to me that besides my business, that I had a balance and I did something that really fed that sense of wanting to make a difference and meaning. And so at the time we had the recruitment business and labor law consulting, and I managed to balance it somehow. A part-time adventure is probably a misnomer, but I'm still doing it at 56, and you know, it really adds such a lot of meaning and satisfaction to my life, but also my family's as well.
A lot of the people I speak to, they talk of a particular moment or a person that inspired them to make this change in their life. Can you remember that moment when you thought, I'm going to walk a different path here? Because we talked about your involvement in the corporate world, of course. And also, what gave you that passion and your mission to, in particular, to highlight the plight of the rhino here in Southern Africa?
I have to say that I think the initial seeds were sown by Kingsley Holgate. The you know, he's an incredible adventurer, and the Royal Geographic Society. He's He's an amazing man, and I think what attracted me to what Kingsley and his family were doing was just that he was on these missions of goodwill with his family and living his passion. So I'd met Kingsley a couple of times at the send-off to some of his expeditions. Strangely enough, I've got to know him, and he actually did the foreword on my book as well. So it's a very nice completion of that circle for me. So, yeah, I think, as I used the word earlier, process of osmosis, you know, it's, I don't know how it is that you come to that point where it all comes together, and suddenly there's a tipping scale in your life, and you realize I'm going to do something different, which, as I said, was in 2015, in a state where I didn't feel I could do an expedition of that nature, you know, dramatically overweight, unhealthy, and feeling I couldn't leave my business for a day without it collapsing. But I got to that point where I decided I'm going to do it, and it was a courageous step. And so faith and courage has always been something which I know is an essential ingredient for me to be able to step into that unknown and to become that little bit mad, as you mentioned. And I had to live by that. As I said, I've been a Sandparks Honorary Ranger for 15 years, and I've had this upbringing from my folks. Conservation is at heart. So it wasn't a far stretch for me to say I wanted to move or combine that desire to get out there and to stretch myself in an adventure form with something so close to my heart, which was rhino conservation. So being involved in Addo, I'd had some interactions with rhino. I was the chairman of the region for a while, and something needed to be done. And, you know, really looked at it and thought, I've got an opportunity here to draw more awareness than anything else to the need for people to move from caring to doing and to step up and to teach the youngsters to do the same. So it was an easy gelling of my two passions that made it all work for me in terms of meaning in my life. Yeah,
yeah, but it's not been a straightforward journey for you. Can you give some thought? What's been the toughest challenge to date? Would you say would it be a physical challenge, a mental challenge, perhaps, or something in your personal life that you've had to overcome?
I've had many difficult physical challenges in terms of the expeditions. You know, obviously the 6,000 Ks. Over 2.5 months, 2,000 Ks, 2,500 Ks in the second and third expeditions. It's hard to get up in the morning when you soar to do the same thing. And I think, excuse me, that being aware of you know, the fact that you're doing this when you're not running your business, that financial pressure was always there because it costs you when you're doing it. But more to your point, I think on a very personal note, the most difficult period personally in my life must have been when our son was diagnosed with cancer, the same one in Cape Town, Daniel. So he's fine now, and he's completely cured of it, but it's no news that any parent wants to hear, anybody actually, of course. But so it was a difficult journey. You know, you want to, as a parent, be able to step in and fix it. But you can't. So you can only hope that you've instilled in your children the fortitude and the faith and the strength that would enable them to overcome this very personal struggle, which he did with absolutely flying colors. But it also just exemplified the need for your family support and friend support as well. Which, we gathered together, or we pulled together as a family just to help him through it and for him to get through it as well. But that, hands down, I think, is the single most difficult moment. You know, it was one of those stories you hear about people going grey. I went grey quite quickly. But, you know, it's all good, hand. There are people that have got a lot worse to deal with in their lives. So it's worked out very well for us, for which we're very grateful, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure in those moments when you're struggling up the hill, you've had enough of that day on the bike, or even at work, those are the moments, and you think back to that, and obviously Daniel's recovery, which has inspired you to go on. Yeah. Talking about some of those long days, you must have had some rather amusing moments on your journeys. You've probably seen more of South Africa, Southern Africa, than most of us, because you've cycled it, of course. Mm. Can you recount some of the lighter moments on your journeys where people have kind of helped you along the way and when you've been ready to give up?
Yeah, the amazing thing that I can just share about that is South Africa is an incredible place. It's not the place that is portrayed in the news. It's not the place that is portrayed in, on social media and all the hate comments and so on. When you're on a bicycle, moving fairly slowly and sometimes very slowly, you get to meet ordinary South Africans and to engage with them, and it's just lovely. There's nothing more vibrant than South Africa, good and bad. It's all part of the picture, And so you would have the moments of cycling and somebody sitting on the side of the road and watching you come from miles away, and eventually you get to him and he has a look and he notices there's a grey beard, underneath that helmet, and this guy's riding fast and out of nowhere, and he'll just hear yo as you go past, and it just lifts you for the next hour or so. But I think if I look back to this last expedition, one of the lightest moments must have been the start of the expedition the day before, actually in Swakopmund, and I rode from Swakopmund to PE, Gqeberha. A bike shop said to me, "Listen, you have to actually postpone the start of the expedition because there's a gale force wind coming in easterly. You can't ride in it. None of us can ride in it. Just postpone." And I said, "Well, I can't. I have an appointment at 12 o'clock on the 22nd of September, where I'll be arriving at the Donkin. I can't miss a day. I've had to back plan every single day. Is coordinate to coordinate. I cannot miss it. I have to ride in it." And so, the first 40 k's of the ride the next morning, which was to Walvis Bay, was like a dream. It was on tar road, and everything went well. And I had a journalist had contacted me to say, "Can I meet you outside Walvis Bay at the airport just to interview you?" Which I did. And we've got, this very sparse landscape in the back, and he was asking me about the day so far. And I said, "It's actually been a cinch, and all this talk of weather and so on, it's actually looks like it's going to be easy." And I knew that there was the dirt road was starting shortly. But he had no sooner gone, and I'd started riding. It was about not even a kilometer away that I got onto the dirt road, which was hellish. It was just, I can tell you, corrugations and sand, and it was like somebody turned on this gigantic fan, and there's nothing to stop the wind, and there's no trees or anything. It was just like, and I was suddenly riding at 5 kilometers an hour. And in pain, a world of pain. That 60 Ks that I had to do like that, it was 10 and a half hours. And when I stopped and I looked at the, my Garmin, it said 4 days recovery, but I had to do it all again the next day. But it's those moments that just, I look back and I chuckle at, that sort of, it's a piece of cake. That's life. 10 minutes later.
Nothing more important than local knowledge, is it? Listen to the locals when they say that. Listen, I love the slogan. It really did capture me. One land, love it. Oh, how is the state of our land? Are we going to get through these challenges? Have you got hope for the future? I often say if we haven't got hope, we haven't got anything. But I also believe that the people are important. You do a lot of work with local communities as well, not just saving our species, but engaging with local communities. How important is that as well?
Yeah, it's the people of South Africa that give me the hope, the ordinary people. The resilience of the South African is incredible. I mean, what we have to withstand on a daily basis, and I'm not just talking about the poverty that is so evident when you ride through this country. Coming from Namibia, it just struck me, the every single town that you come into has got the damning marks of burnt tires at the entrance where the roads have been blocked. And of course, that was one thing that I had to navigate as well, riding through that on one occasion, at least at Upington. But times are tough, and the politicians are depressing, man. They're full of corruption and deceit, and it feels like things are not working properly, you know, the judicial system and the politics of, as I say, it's just, when you look at that. But I've got absolute hope when I speak to the real people. And as I say, I've spoken to a lot of them in 10,500 Ks that I've ridden around the countries. But they are so resilient and so determined to succeed and to find a way around the obstacles. So resilience is the ability to bounce back to your original shape. It's a toughness. And somehow we bounce back to that original shape quite easily in South Africa. And meeting these kids, you know, the community work that we're involved in, on the one hand, it's quite heartbreaking when you see the kids are at school that are really, you know, hungry. They don't have sanitary pads. And these kids, you know, we take sometimes shoes and things, and these kids are trying to force their feet into the shoe because they're just so desperate to have maybe their first pair of shoes and so on. And you realize how easy it is to make a difference, to be kind to people, and how much there's a need now for Ubuntu, for this collaboration and for those that have got more to help those that have got these and so on. But the contact and the context, or the context for us really, is conservation. And we, like anything in Africa, you've got to look at it holistically, and you can't speak to the kids on the border of Addo, Nambatam Sankwa, where we're quite involved, and say to them, listen, conserve that rhino on the other side of the fence so these first world people that are driving through can enjoy it. You have to be able to explain why it's important to them and show that you care, actually. So hence the name One Land Love It, which can seem quite elementary to people. But it's something that's understood by the kids. And if you drive through Nambatam Sankwa now, they'll all be shouting, Oli, Oli, and we've got this life-size rhino that we'll pull behind us just to add a picture to the acronym as well. His name's also called Oli. But yeah, I've got hope. As much as, you know, poaching figures are on the increase, there are signs of positive things as well. You know, there's the private reserves are doing amazing work. The judicial system, like in Makhanda or Grahamstown, they're really doing great work in terms of dealing with poachers. There's signs of hope, and really there's when I see conservationists out there that are putting their lives on the line, rangers that are sleeping in the bush and fighting for our heritage, I've got to believe that we're going to win this battle. It's just whether we can do it in time is the question.
Well, I think with people like you around, Wayne, we've got a chance, and I'm sure you've inspired a lot of people listening to this. How can people help, and how can people follow what you've been doing and the journey of One Land Love It?
Yeah, it's so often get asked the question, what can we do to help? And please don't think that you can't do anything. Educate yourself about the rhino situation in particular, and I understand that there's a lot of rhino fatigue, but just understand about it. Read the articles that come across your path, and then decide how can you, within the framework of your own life, do something that makes a difference. And it can be something very simple. It can be liking a post or so on. But the least you can do is to explain to your children the need for conservation and environmental preservation, and to let them see that you're serious about that. And get involved where you can. You know, not everybody can go and ride around the country. I completely understand that. But you can support events. You can buy something from a charity. And get involved with non-profits, you know, that are credible non-profits. There are many that are not credible, where a large portion of the funds are actually going on so-called admin fees, and possibly are admin fees, but they're very high. You know, I'm very proud of One Land Love It in that regard. You know, we have a very very, very small drain on any funds that come in. You know, it goes to the area that it should. So if you're a corporate, go and find us on oneland.co.za. Or find us on Facebook, just search One Land Love It. And if you've got some finances at the end of the year that, you know, you would, in terms of your social responsibility, that you'd like to donate, we can give Section 18A certificates. So consider that. And, you know, if you want to give some passive giving rather than donations and so on, then on My Planet, if you go and search or register or just add another beneficiary, One Land Love It, you can find us there as well. And every time you go and shop at Woolies and so on, a portion of that purchase will actually come to Ollie as well. And we can use that for direct rhino work, you know, the dehorning and the collaring and so on, for the education that we do, the community work and so on. It will go to a good cause and a good good cause, and that I can promise. Yeah.
And the next expedition, when are you on your bike again?
Yeah, you know, I know by now that before I commit to anything, I have to be 100%, because I always go back to that initial day. That's when the magic happens, when you make that commitment. So I can honestly say there's nothing at this stage on the card. I would love to write another book, though. I find it so fulfilling to do that, and just to put it on paper and to digest it all. So I'm planning to do that. And in the meantime, we'll throw all our weight into growing One Land Love It together with the board, and to make the difference that we can in 2023 for our rhino and those that look after them.
Thank you, Wayne, for everything you do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dean.
That was Frontierland with Dr. Dean Allen. For more podcasts, visit algoafm.co.za.